Hello, captives and captive friends, and welcome to episode 101 of the Global Captive Podcast, supported by the EY Global Captive Network and hosted by me, Richard Kutcher. We have two interviews for you over the next 25 minutes, and they do have something in common with each other. First, we are going to hear from relatively new captive owner David Williams, Director of Risk Management and Safety at Boys Town, based in Omaha, Nebraska. Boys Town is a storied and well-known not-for-profit supporting homeless and vulnerable young people, and it has a surprisingly large footprint with a host of complex risks. David will delve into all of that for us in just a moment and why they formed a pure captive in Tennessee in 2022. Later, I will also be joined by man of many hats, Michael Corbett. Mac, coincidentally, is an independent non-executive director on the Boys Town Captive, and he's also the former Tennessee Captive Regulator. Today, however, he is Senior Vice President at Pinnacle Financial Partners, where he has been building a captive banking proposition at the firm. And at the end of last year, he was also appointed President of the bank's Tennessee domiciled Apex Captive Insurance Company. But before we hear from Mr. Corbett, let's join David Williams of Boys Town, who starts by telling us all about the not-for-profit organization.
First of all, thanks for having me today. This is great. Yeah, Boys Town, we've been around since 1917. We were founded by a Catholic priest, Father Edward Flanagan. His first mission was to try to reform men who had homeless issues and alcoholism, things like that. Well, he quickly found out that, geez, maybe I should spend more time on younger kids and boys particularly. So he started Boys Town by bringing in young boys and that were homeless, that were in trouble, runaways, things like that, and basically set up a system to give them credit for good behavior. Mm-hmm. And as those credits add up, they get more privileges, things like that. So we, at one point, we were on the outskirts of Omaha. Now we're surrounded by Omaha. Mm-hmm. But we were allowed to remain independent as our own village. And so we have a school on site. We have 50 or so homes. We have a field house, visitor center, functioning city with fire department, police department. And we also have healthcare on site with a hospital and medical clinics throughout Omaha.
Wow, yeah, so quite a significant, serious operation. And I imagine obviously a lot of risk management and insurance needs come with that as well. So tell us, how did you come to be working for Boys Town, and then when and why did the possibility of a captive first arise?
Sure. I started Boys Town about 10 years ago. Prior to that, I was with Aon, and we were the broker for Boys Town, and I was asked to come over when their risk manager was retiring. Which was an easy decision. Love Boys Town and great mission. I've been there since 2014. As the markets have kind of evolved and hardening, we enjoyed a $25 million umbrella with Philadelphia Insurance Company, a great partner of ours. And a few years back, in I think it was 2019, they asked us to reduce our limit from 25 to 10, which we did. But we were able to buy excess on top of that. And then 2 years later, we were asked again to drop from 10 to 5. And so we went out to the market, quickly found that we couldn't get any of the excess to drop down into that 5x5 layer. And we couldn't get anybody to write it unless they had that primary piece. Well, we didn't want to leave Philadelphia. So at that point, it's like, okay, here we go. Let's start a captive to cover that.
And was it hard in terms of, you know, obviously, I think you've probably worked with captives before. You're quite, you know, familiar with captives and how they work and the benefits of them. Was it hard to do that education piece internally and get internal buy-in? And how did you explain the business model and the long-term value and strategy of how the captive would work internally?
Yeah, I had some familiarity with captives. I had a couple clients when I was at Aon, but mainly was on the claim side. Didn't have any experience with forming or any of that stuff. So I had to get myself educated first, which I did, and and immersed myself in the white papers, everything that goes along with learning about a certain topic and relying heavily on my broker at Gallagher. So once I got up to speed and we kind of figured out what lines we wanted to put in there, I went to my boss first, our CFO, to talk to her and gain her approval. And then we talked to the CEO. He was like, yeah, great. Sounds like a good long-term solution for us. And then after that, we had to go to our board of trustees, to the finance chair, and get his approval, which we did. And so it was relatively easy. It was, we have a lot of smart people at Boys Town, and they get it, and they realize this is a perfect opportunity for us and to use this as a long-term vehicle to take care of our risk that we can't get insured.
So I think, was it 2022 the captive was set up?
Yes, we started in August of 21 down the road of getting all the feasibility study and actuarial studies done. Those came back, and then we got the approval, and then started looking at domicile. And I had gone to the World Captive Conference in Florida, met with people from Tennessee, Utah, and Missouri. And after talking to all of them and then having some discussions internally and what we were looking for and just how we felt about each domicile, we chose Tennessee. And then after that, we had to go back to Philadelphia because they were going to be our fronting for that $10 million. And we would reinsure the five. And so we had to get that agreement in place, which was took a little bit more time than I thought it would. So we were running up at the last minute there, getting approval from Tennessee in August of 22. And here we're wanting to put our property deductibles into there, which were effective 9/1. So okay. We were right up to the deadline.
And in terms of what lines of insurance you have in the captive today, what are those?
Yeah, we did all of our, we have wind hail deductibles that are pretty large, and then plus our AOP on the property. And then we have the 5X5 excess, and the workers' compensation deductible is in there. And so those are good vehicles to really help fund that 5X5 umbrella excess that we needed covered. And then here, just this last year, we added our med stop loss to the captive.
So it's great, and people who listen to this podcast regularly would have heard me say this numerous times before, but it's so often the case that when we hear stories like yourselves of setting up a new captive, it's set up for one very specific reason or one very specific challenge, but quite quickly, once you have the captive in place, you start to see other areas that you're like, oh, well, it makes sense to include medical stop loss in there, or it makes sense to add this other line of insurance. Have you found that now the captive is there, you can already see other areas it may make sense to deploy it?
We do. We've really roundtabled this with our broker on some creative ideas, but we really want to be careful. We don't want to add so many things so quickly and get so big that we lose sight of what we're there for, and we want to make sure it's profitable, or we have enough capital in there to support a loss if we needed to. Luckily, we've never had an umbrella loss, but knock on wood. But yeah, we've looked at, especially with the erosion of the property market here over the last few years, we're really looking at some creative ideas there, whether we up our AOP deductible substantially, or we take certain TIV out of it so that we can, you know, lessen our overall TIV and self-insure certain properties. We're just looking at all options to try to save some money on our insurance spend.
So it sounds like, David, that you have taken a very considered approach to growing the captive and how the captive's used. Have you thought about what might be other areas, future lines of business that you could explore for the captive in the future?
Yes, we've, in addition to upping our property deductibles and maybe self-insuring some things, we're also looking at writing an evacuation policy. We have homes in Florida and also in Louisiana and New Orleans area. So if we get a hurricane that comes up, we want to get our kids out of there and to safety. And well, okay, the hurricane hasn't hit yet. Well, chances are if it doesn't, there's no coverage for any of that.
Yeah.
So we want to write an evacuation policy to cover us for those expenses. Because it does take quite a bit of money to move people, and and to house them other places. And then we're also looking at throwing our automotive physical damage. We've got vehicles on our campus, about probably 175 of them that we need to, that we self-insure the phys dam. So we'll want to throw that into the captive as well and fund that. And then I also wrote down here, whatever lines tank in the future. So yep, that'll be something that goes south, and we just want to be prepared. And but again, we don't want to grow so fast and lose sight of why we're doing this in the first place and why we need to be solvent and build that capital in there. So, but we'll be wise with that.
Yeah, and we were on the panel together yesterday at Seeker, and we kind of mentioned that about, you know, having the captive in place now means that you can react and you can be flexible and nimble if you do run into challenges in the commercial market, that you have the captive already in place, so it can step in.
Yeah, and it's funny how, you know, we thought the cyber market was going south, and it did for a couple of years there, and then all of a sudden last year it rebounds and we get a big reduction. So we, you know, again, we just kind of, we want to have it there, and we don't want to react too quickly, but we want to be prepared if we see something going, you know, south on a long-term basis.
Fantastic. I know a topic that we talk about a lot in Europe is the role of independent directors on boards, and some captive domiciles require it, some don't, and in the US all the jurisdictions don't require it, but I believe you did actually appoint an independent director to your captive board. Why did you feel the need to do that, and what value do you think that person brings?
Yeah, we Tennessee requires you to have a resident director.
Yeah,
and our attorney that we used to form our captive, Ben Whitehouse, he said, you know, initially, hey, I think I got the guy for you. So we had a call with Michael Corbett,
yep,
who's well, very well known in Tennessee and throughout the captive industry. And Michael said, you know, in very few words, hey, I really wasn't looking to add more responsibility here later in my career, but when Ben told me about your organization and I looked into what they were, I couldn't say no.
Yeah.
So, and Michael's just been an awesome resource for us, as well as Ben in Tennessee, and also Josh Clark from Gallagher, another person that was instrumental when he was with the department in getting us to over to Tennessee.
Fantastic. Yeah, all good people. I know all of those guys. So sounds like you've got a good team around you. And David, it's been great to have you on to the Global Captive Podcast. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me today.
Thank you then to David for being so generous with that insight. It's always great to hear firsthand about new captive journeys. Now, the next voice is one that should be familiar to many. Michael Corbett is well known in the US captive market, particularly from his period as Director of Captive Insurance at the State of Tennessee from 2011 to 2019. He is at Pinnacle Financial Partners today, as well as holding a couple of other captive roles, which we'll hear about over the next 10 minutes. So, Michael Corbett, welcome onto the Global Captive Podcast. Good long-term friend of mine. I can't quite believe, Mac, that we haven't had you on the pod in the almost five years we've been doing this thing. So I apologize for the late invitation, but it's great to have you onto the Global Captive Podcast.
No, Richard, thanks for having me. Lots happened over the past 5 years. Among them, I went from being the regulator for the state of Tennessee, then COVID hit, then I went to work for a bank. So it's not your fault, it's probably mine.
So Mac, yeah, you touched upon it there. We first met probably 10 years ago when you were regulator for the state of Tennessee and really growing that captive insurance section at the time, which was a relatively new legislation there, I think, a relatively new section. How did you enjoy your time as being an insurance and specifically a captive insurance regulator?
Well, it was a wonderful experience building a business within state government. There aren't many parts of state government, probably federal government, that actually make money.
Mm.
Most of them are outlays of expenses, whether it's the education department or other parts of state government, schools and roads. But captives bring revenue to the state, and so we built something pretty much out of whole cloth. I think when I left, we were at about 700 risk-bearing entities have been created, about $2.5 billion of annual revenue going into banks somewhere. I think we've broken the 1,000 mark of captives in Tennessee. It happened because of the help of an awful lot of really great people, whether it was folks up in Vermont like Dave Provost or Steve Kenyon down in Delaware, as most of these state domiciles are very good about sharing information that allowed an upstart, Tennessee, back in 2011. Although we had captive statutes going back to 1978, we really didn't do anything with them until 2011. And here we are today as a pretty well-known domicile throughout the country, if not the world.
Yeah, and two of the, I'm moderating a panel later today with three captive owners, two of them relatively new, and both of those new captive owners, Boys Town and Geodis, are both domiciled in Tennessee. So I'm going to hear a bit from them later. We're going to have, hopefully, David from Boys Town on the pod this week as well. So you then left the state of Tennessee and you joined Pinnacle Financial Partners in 2020.
Correct.
2020, I believe. Tell us a bit about your role there. We'll come on to your new role there, but your other role there and what Pinnacle Financial Partners does in the captive insurance industry.
I appreciate you asking because I think this will probably resonate with a lot of people. Left the state government, actually got to retire.
Yes,
which is sort
I
of
thought
nice.
You had retired.
It was nice. And so I retired for a day. And then in March of 2020, went on board with a good-sized regional bank called Pinnacle Financial Partners. Now it's about a $50 billion bank. And I believe that's the month that COVID hit.
Which
one would think it would put a hiccup in the changeover, but actually it turned out to be very helpful because banking is a critical service. So we never went home. We were always still in the office. And it was a good time to start building Pinnacle into a strong, serious player in the captive insurance space. I told management at Pinnacle that there were a few other banks that were really committed to this space, first and foremost, Comerica out of Detroit, now Dallas, I believe, Toronto Dominion maybe, Wells Fargo a little bit. But if you're going to be serious about this space, you're going to have to offer the same products and services and then some that they're doing in order to make a name for yourself. And with full commitment from the bank, we've done exactly that, offering, you know, all of the traditional services of letters of credit and depository agreements and all the way down to the trust services for Reg 114 trusts, as well as premium financing and a host of other issues. That we've now got close to $600 million of capital deposits from captives. We'll be at $1 billion in another year or so, and I think we really have arrived in the space. We've had great support, great follow-through, and we cover a fairly wide geographic area from D.C. down to Florida all the way over to Texas of bankers going out there and talking to captive owners and captive prospects.
And I presume you work with captives across multiple domiciles just onshore or onshore? Can you work offshore as well, or do you have to focus?
Can work offshore as well. There's some particular things with Cayman and Bermuda that require Class A banking relationships, which we're already working on, making sure that we can become a branch in Cayman, but we're already working with offshore domiciles as well.
Fantastic. So as you mentioned, obviously COVID aside, it's a good time to get involved into captives as Pinnacle is a new entrant into working with captives because of the hard market and the amount of growth. We've been in some sessions this morning talking about that growth in captives, you know, unprecedented growth over the last 4 years. So I think a bit like, you know, the frontier market as well, for example, we've seen so much more increased interest and new players enter that market. But what struck me about the banking side, which you touched upon, is and you mentioned Comerica, which is a great example. You know, captive market is a relatively slow moving market. You've got to show staying power, you've got to show commitment, you've got to turn up to these things, make sure you're pressing the flesh with the captive managers, captive owners. How pleased are you then that kind of relatively quickly it kind of this entrance has paid dividends?
And without patting myself on the back any more than I probably should, I think it didn't hurt that we have somebody at the bank that has been a former regulator. There's a certain what's the right word, Richard?
Is opens the door?
Maybe a little panache to okay. it. It makes us different. It also made it possible for me to educate a lot of bankers who don't know anything about captives, where they get comfortable enough that they're able to talk to their clients about it a little bit. It also helps that Pinnacle itself has its own captive. Apex Captive Insurance Company, we've had it since the early 2000s. I believe it was in Nevada for a while and then redomesticated over to Tennessee.
Yeah, great. So you've anticipated my next question. So Apex, Captive Insurance Company, Tennessee domiciled captive. And I saw on LinkedIn you were appointed the president of that captive in December. Tell us about how that role came about. How, you know, are you continuing your work in the other part of Pinnacle with kind of selling collateral and other kind of solutions? And tell us a bit about the captive in particular.
Well, apparently the bank thinks I have a really big head because they've asked me to wear several hats. First and foremost is promoting the captive industry and attracting those kinds of deposits and account relationships that Pinnacle is interested in growing. Our chief administrative officer decided to retire back in, and I had already been sitting on the board of Apex, but when he retired, he asked me to take over the job as president. I am delighted to do it and also see a great opportunity with the captive because it has been picking up most of the deductible layer of all of our property, management liability, cyber, D&O cover, and we've been able to watch that over the past couple of years, and I've got some really interesting plans about how to use it and leverage it for the future.
Yeah, I mean, how presumably Pinnacle has a risk insurance manager. Obviously, they have a big part to play in the insurance programs for the bank. But obviously, president, you want to be quite an active president of the captive and to make sure that it is running correctly and it is being of most value possible to the group.
Indeed. For me, a captive, and the way I explain it to a lot of people, is that from the beginning stages through the end, it's a little bit like visiting with an architect first to design the plans of the house that you want to build, which is typically a captive consultant, a captive designer, of which there are many in the industry that you know as well as I do. And then there's a person that actually builds the house. You know, that's the captive manager. In some cases, the captive management firms can provide two roles. We use an outside consultant as well as a captive manager to look after our captive. Integral part of how it works for us.
Great. Well, Mac, it's been a real pleasure to have you on to the Global Captive Podcast. Thank you very much.
Please. Thank you very much, Richard.
Well, thank you to David Williams of Boystown and Michael Corbett of Pinnacle Financial Partners for a great little episode of the Global Captive Podcast. To make sure you are following the latest captive insurance news, analysis, and thought leadership, do subscribe to the twice weekly Captive Intelligence newsletter and are visiting www.captiveintelligence.io. In the meantime, stay safe, stay well, and see you next time, captives.